It's Tony Mack and the Triplett with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplett, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins! Touchdown, Auburn!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are, Tony Mack and the Triplett.
Welcome in, everybody. Tony Mack and the Triplett, and it's game day, our first game day show. That's right, when you leave our airwaves, which probably shouldn't, because we're going to have some great games on these very same airwaves later anyway. But when you leave these airwaves, you won't have time to just stop and contemplate how great of a show it was, how Antonio's going to kick Aaron's ass in the pick'ems. You won't get to think about any of that because it's kickoff, and you're going to have football all the way, not even all the way until tomorrow. You're going to have football all the way through Monday night. Yeah, that's right. We got football tonight. We've got football tomorrow. We've got college football on Monday. They're all relatively, on paper, good games. That, whatever happens out there is yet to be determined, but I'm so freaking pumped. I can't wait to do this show. There's certain things we can talk about. I mean, you look over here at the headlines, you've got three more women that have filed a suit against Baylor. You know, Ed Orgeron mentioning that he's going to keep all the suspension talk in-house. He's not going to announce who gets suspended for a competitive advantage. We're not going to talk about all that because we got so much football to talk about. Aaron, please share your excitement.
I'm super excited.
You sound like it.
Could be like that that demo we recorded. I'm super excited.
Oh, my God.
I wish everybody could see.
If you ever have to record a promo like that again, it needs to be a TV commercial so they can see your movements, because that was the funniest thing that I've ever seen, this guy trying to gain enthusiasm for a promo through his entire body. Into making,
it was too boring the first time, so I came back on and was like, "What was it? Hey guys,
just hey guys, it's Aaron Triplett." How excited are you for this week?
Well, it's a huge week and probably the biggest we've seen, at least as far as one individual game being Florida State and Alabama. I think it's the first time that two teams in the top three have played each other in week one. I mean, last year's opening week was gargantuan as far as amount of games that were played that were between ranked teams. But with as far as implications are concerned, this Alabama-Florida State game is as big of an opening week game as we've seen in, I don't even remember the last time we had a game this big, or at least with these high-ranked teams on the slate in the first week.
Well, yeah, they're shopping it around as the best opening day matchup ever of all time, which, again, on paper, absolutely. We don't know what's going to happen in the game. I have a pretty good idea of what's going to happen tonight. But on paper, I don't think we've ever seen an opening game with the 1-3 matchup going on there, which certainly in the first couple of weeks we've seen that, but never week one, because I think Oklahoma and Florida State had a top five matchup a couple of years ago, back in like 2010, 2011, but that was at like week two or three. So we've seen those matchups, but never week one. So it'll be really fun to see, but stacked up to last year, I really don't want people to start making those comparisons, because I don't, at the end of this week, I don't want the college football fans out there to start taking everything for granted like we always do and start complaining about how boring of a week it was. You only have this is by far and away the biggest offseason in all of sports. It's the longest offseason in all sports. I think from the national championship game until week one today, it's like 260 something days. It's like 200 and something days. You don't get college football, and then you're going to complain about a down week. Just enjoy watching the football.
Like we said last week, football has the longest, or it's the only sport where it's the regular season is longer than or is shorter than the off season, because the rest of the sports you have, you know, you blink and the off season's done and you're starting back again. And even in the NFL, because the NFL goes along about a month longer than college football, they start back with preseason games at the beginning of August. So while they're probably going to shorten the preseason after, you know, what we've seen this year, but at the same time, you get a little bit more. But college, you will have to wait from that national championship, which is, what, the first Monday in January that's not January 1st. And then you wait all the way until the first weekend of September, because it's always Labor Day. Well, except this year when we had week zero. But it is the longest off season, and you just wait. You don't get to see any. The only thing you get to watch is the spring games. Of course, you don't learn anything from spring games anyway. But that's really the only taste that you get. And so the only thing you have is by what you hear and what you read online. So
exactly.
It's always so anticipated. While last year was better because there were so many ranked matchups, this week, of course, is not – I mean, there's nothing to slouch at this year on opening week. Because of this big game. And then, of course, we'll get to next week and people will complain, because then you get the second and third weeks are typically the slowest in college football, because you get the second and third week and then like the week before the last one, especially in the SEC when a bunch of those teams are playing the cup.
So that's the worst.
The FCS cupcakes. But you get some of that these first 2 weeks, or these the second and third week. But the first week is always usually pretty good. We've got some maybe not as highly anticipated matchups on the list as we did last year, but we have some interesting matchups, really, that I think really going to enjoy.
Absolutely, and it's just crazy to me. Like, you were mentioning how, you know, spring football, you know, you really don't get to see much, but think about all of the big moments that happen after football that everybody gets so excited for down here in the South, that the South kind of started all of this. Like, the SEC fans down here, National Signing Day has almost become a holiday because fans are so excited that they're living off of the high that was the football season. About a month later, they're so excited that they're trying to make a big deal out of something because they just want that football. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I love the fact that National Signing Day is such a big deal. But they make a big deal out of that. And then they turn around and make a big deal out of spring football because they get to see something. And then when you get to games like this weekend, when you've got some good matchups and maybe some not so good matchups, they take it for granted. They start complaining. Well, this week sucked. Hope next week's better. You got to stop that, because you're setting yourself up all year long to be disappointed. And don't be, because if you get disappointed these first 4 weeks of the season, then you've only got 8 weeks to be excited. And I promise you, you're going to be disappointed about something along the way again. So just at the very base core level, be excited that you get to watch meaningful football all weekend long. That's the best part. And even week two and week three, sure, I know there's supposed to be the slower weeks all around, but you still got some good matchups next week. You got Ohio State hosting Oklahoma. You've got Texas going to USC. You got, or that might be week three. Then you got
Auburn and Clemson next weekend.
You got good matchups for the next 3 weeks to get you into conference play. So no complaining. And we're not going to complain. And we hope you guys don't complain either. We're bringing you a brand new segment to this show. Finally get to bring it back. We had it on our podcast last year. You ready, Aaron? It's time for the headlines you expect to see. This time it'll be on Tuesday. That's right. It is headlines. The way we do this, last year we did a show on Wednesdays. It was right in the middle of the week, so we could bring headlines. We could pull headlines from what happened the week before. We can't do that. We're not going to bring headlines that happened an entire week ago. So we're going to give you expected headlines, headlines we might expect to see when this week of football is over. Aaron, I'm going to kick it to you first. What's the first headline you would expect to see on Tuesday when all this is over?
Two for this week. My first one was a Black Diamond thriller, and this is talking about West Virginia and Virginia Tech. They play Sunday night, not tonight, tomorrow night, and it's the first meeting that they've had since 2005. They haven't met since 2005. They battle for the Black Diamond Trophy. Obviously, West Virginia, Virginia Tech, right close to each other. And it's disappointing that because of – I hate the way this conference realignment and all this other stuff has taken away a lot of good rivalries. So it's good to see one back in action. And they're playing, of course, neutral site. They're playing in at FedEx Field in Landover where the Redskins play. And I think that's going to be a thrilling game. I think it's going to be decided in the final seconds, and it's probably going to be the best game that we see as far as entertainment value coming down to the wire. I think it potentially is going to be the best game we see, most entertaining this entire weekend, back and forth. So I think it's going to be fantastic. So I think that that's going to be one of the headlines on Tuesday.
I'm glad you brought that up because that's a game I'm really excited about also, and that goes into my preview here. We are at the end of towards the end of the show, we're going to make our picks. We're going to pick every SEC game, hopefully, this hour. And then in the second hour, we're going to do our big game picks, games that we think are the big games of the week. It's usually about four to six games, typically. And Aaron and I compile our records at the end of the season and see who won. And this year, because I think because we're on the radio, we're going to try to actually get a trophy going. But if you guys want to compete, just tweet in your picks whenever we pick games. Do that. You can tweet at me, at TonyMacUMP. You can tweet at Aaron, @AtripTennis. Or just tweet at the show, at TonyMacTriplet on Twitter. Absolutely, you guys can get in on this. And my first headline is going to be Brian Daboll runs Daboll. I think Alabama really gets back to running the football. Florida State has the most talented secondary in college football. You got Derwin James, Travaris McFadden back there. Derwin James is best hitting safety I've seen since Ed Reed. He's huge. He comes up with big time hits. There's been question at the end of the season, although his last possession of his freshman season was a touchdown, there's been questions around Hurts' passing ability. I don't think he's really going to have to. I think he has improved. I think he'll still struggle a little early in this season, but I think ultimately they're going to be able to run the ball and run the ball at will with all the running backs by committee they have. Nick Saban does like to run the hot hand, and we've seen that several times over the course of his tenure at Alabama, but that whole dynamic changes when you have a quarterback that can run as well as Hurts can. So I think Hurts probably gets the majority of the carries and probably leads the team in rushing tonight. But I think him, Bo Scarborough, Damian Harris really get after it. And although Hurts might struggle passing the ball, Brian Daboll is going to run Daboll, and Alabama probably going to win because of that. Aaron, do you have another headline?
Yeah, my other headline is, and this is going to give away a pick, but I've got my other headline being the McElwain meltdown, because everyone here should know my opinion already on how I think on what I think about Jim McElwain as a coach. But amidst all this controversy, all this suspension, I think what is it, 10 and counting players suspended for the Michigan game, including their best player Antonio Callaway, who's had some issues of his own, more than just one in the past, but he's their only source of offense, their best player in my opinion. They're going to get dominated today. I'll make a bold statement. They're going to get blown out.
You know that line only went to, I mean, I know it moved, but it went to 5. It's not like Michigan's expected to blow them out now.
And it's only like I just saw, because we've got game day on in here, that Michigan's only got like 51% chance to win.
Well, you have to understand. I mean, think about everything they lost last year.
They returned
like 5 starters.
I think highly of Jim Harbaugh. I think that Michigan's going to reload, and I think they're going to do just enough. I think Chris Evans on offense anyway. I think Chris Evans is going to run the ball, and Spate's going to be consistent. But I think that they're going to reload on defense. They've got a good defensive game plan, and Florida's offense, of course, is nothing special in general. But you take away their only legitimate offensive weapon, and they have nothing. They have nothing. I don't think they're going to score a touchdown. I got them kicking 4 field goals in this game. Unless they score on defense or something. But I think Michigan's going to score on defense, to be totally honest with you. And I think Michigan's going to blow Florida out.
I'm not going to give away a pick here on that game because that is one of our big games. But I, to a sense, I agree with you. I mean, Florida's definitely going to struggle. They lost Antonio Callaway, who's not just their leading receiver. He's huge in the return game. But also their leading rusher from a year ago, Jordan Scarlett, was suspended as well. A good receiving talent. We haven't seen him play. I can't remember his name, but he was the one that went on that recruiting trip to Ohio State. And Ohio State stopped recruiting him because while on the trip, he got in trouble with marijuana. Well, he got in trouble a couple weeks ago with marijuana at Florida. So they're not only losing two big-time starters, they're also losing a lot of depth around them. I mean, they're running out of options. Lucky for them, on the other side, Michigan's got a lot of question marks, too. I mean, you replace just about every big playmaker on that defense a year ago, almost. You got some good guys coming back, don't get me wrong. The problem for me with Michigan is on the other side. Florida's always going to have a good defense, it seems. And then you look at Michigan, you got Williams-Pate, who did not look good a year ago. I mean, you can pull up some things and dress it up however you want to. He wasn't that good. You could pull up his passing chart all over the field with his receivers from a year ago. He wasn't very good, and he loses his top three targets from a year ago. So there's going to struggle. All that. That's going to be the struggle boat game right there. They're both going to struggle, and I think it's going to be an ugly, ugly, sloppy game. I don't think you see a lot of high scores. Maybe the only way is maybe, you know, some busted coverages or like some scoop and scores or some defensive touchdowns. But I think offenses struggle big time in that game. I'm not going to give away my pick just yet, but I am going to get to my last headline. And that's losing is such a butch. And I think that's giving away a pick right there. I think Tennessee is going to get beat by Georgia Tech Monday night. It's the Monday game.
That's the Monday game.
Yeah, I think they get beat by Georgia Tech Monday. Georgia Tech, it's interesting because we talk about everything that Florida's getting suspended for, and then we talk about everything that Michigan lost to the draft. Well, Georgia Tech lost their leading rusher. So that's going to hurt. But and they're threatening to start four quarterbacks, but I really don't think it's going to matter what quarterback you start. They're all probably fast and athletic. It's a system there. That's the definition of running a system, the Georgia Tech's triple option. On the other side, you got Tennessee, who's missing so much. You've got you're replacing Josh Dobbs, one of the best quarterbacks in your university's history, but all of the injuries and all the in a suspension that just happened a little bit ago. You've got linebacker Darren Kirkland out for the season. Done. Torres meniscus had surgery on Wednesday, I believe. Done. Offensive tackle Chance Hall. He's out for the season. Done. Another offensive tackle, Colbert. He's hurt with a knee injury. Wide receiver Josh Smith has a shoulder sprain. Left tackle Drew Richmond has had a I think he was the one that got suspended. It was undisclosed for a while, but he's suspended for the opening game, violating team rules. Jaquez Jones, another receiver. Season-ending knee surgery. And then Colton Jumper, former walk-on, he's supposed to replace Kirkland. He might be shaken up a little bit. And John Kelly's about the only thing you can count on in that football game. And then maybe Tim Jordan, who was like a three-star dude. They're saying that the four-star guy they brought in, Ty Chandler, isn't ready. And that's coming from his teammates, that he's getting better, but he's not quite there. Tennessee is going to struggle bad. I picked them losing this game before, a while back, because I like Georgia Tech. I like the matchup Georgia Tech poses. And I had Tennessee going 7-5. I'm absolutely seeing that come true before my eyes. And we haven't seen a snap yet, so I very well could be wrong. It could turn around and we can get Tennessee magic like we had a year ago. But it's really, really starting to fall apart for Butch Jones.
Well, I think Georgia Tech is battling a lot of injuries, too. They've got a lot of guys banged up coming in. They don't know who their quarterback's going to be first. They lose a three-year starter in Justin Thomas. Their leading rusher, I think, is suspended.
He is. I do think they know who their quarterback is. They're playing the Jim McElwain, Jim Harbaugh game right now. That they threatened to start four. They listed four quarterbacks as their starter on their depth chart to mess with Tennessee. I think they know who they're going to go with. They're just playing a little game.
Yeah, the only coach dumb enough to start three quarterbacks or three plus quarterbacks in a game is Gus Malzahn against Clemson last year. And I'm not going to get into that, but that was arguably the worst coach game I think I've ever seen in my entire life. Cameron Petway didn't get one single carry in that game, and what has become kind of an enigma that game, just a mystery. But despite that, I mean, Tennessee, I think this is going to be just an odd game, and I know we're going to get into it in more depth later, but I think that just both of these teams, it's just I think it's going to set the tone for how these two teams are going to play for the rest of the season, and whoever comes out on top might have a chance to have a better year. I'm not really expecting much out of either of these teams as far as, you know, what's going to happen down the stretch. But I think it's also going to be an entertaining game. Other than West Virginia, Virginia Tech being, I think, going to be a better game, I think Georgia Tech and Tennessee, despite the whatever quality kind of football you get out of those two teams, it's going to be a good game, I believe.
Yeah, we saw Tennessee last year, opening week, go up against an ACC opponent, Virginia Tech. And Virginia Tech, first couple weeks of the season, couldn't get out of their own way. Had an early lead against Tennessee. Tennessee came back and just skull-drugged them. I think at the beginning of the first two games last year, Virginia Tech had lost a total of 9 fumbles, and then they went on to have a 10-win season. I don't know that Georgia Tech – that was first-year coach Justin Fuente as well. I don't think Paul Johnson is going to have that much rust to knock off. I think this triple option, he knows. He's run it so long. I know you're replacing guys, but you're plugging them into a system you've been running for a very, very long time. So that's going to be a game to keep your eye on Monday. Some good eye candy out there seeing Georgia Tech and Tennessee. Hopefully there's some field left to play on after Alabama and Florida State tear that up tonight. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we got your Crying Jordan Faces of the Week. That's Tony Mack and the Triplet right here on Sports Radio 730 103.9 The Ump.
Sports Radio The Ump. Because we care.
Welcome back, Tony Mack and the Triplet. Getting you guys ready for kickoff. We're back with our Crying Jordan Face of the Week. If you guys want to get in on this, send us your Crying Jordan Faces of the Week. We're absolutely open to that. I Like Pie last week got in, Falling on My Laces, on Twitter, and he got in immediately after the show. Last Saturday there were some games, and this was the front runner for a while for me, but I believe it was Oregon State. Oregon State, you know, they held up a board with 4 different things on it. They held up a board with a Crying Jordan Face on it. And that very same play, they lost a fumble. And that was a Crying Jordan Face on a Crying Jordan Face would have been just fantastic. But there were so many other good things that we could have put our Crying Jordan Faces on. And if you guys want to get in on that, at Tony Mack UMP, at A Trip Tennis, at Tony Mack Triplet, go give us a follow there and give us your Crying Jordan Face of the Week, because they're all great and they could be better than mine and Aaron's. And there's no doubt that they're all going to be good. But before I throw it to you, Aaron, I'm not going to give mine yet. I'm going to let you give yours first. But my honorable mention, Crying Jordan Face of the Week, was Cole Kublik because of his bumping into the ref and the ref staring him down. Number one, I didn't want to do that because I didn't want to disrespect another guy I work with at the station. Have a lot of respect for Cole's work. And also, everybody, a lot of like Barstool Sports and people that don't know who Cole is or anything, some of them said this reporter's not going to make it out alive, blah, blah, blah. Cole's a big guy. The ref was big, too. Don't get me wrong. Cole's a big guy. First off, Cole and that ref was the best matchup of that Arkansas-FAMU game. That was the best matchup on the field right there. But I don't want to disrespect Cole by putting a Crying Jordan Face on him and kind of implying that the ref could have taken him, because I don't think that's the case. I just thought it was funny.
And, I mean, Cole's a former center from Auburn.
Right.
So definitely not a small individual. And just thinking about his back in his days at Auburn, reminds me of when I was it was my first year of college, and I would listen to Cole's show, Kublik and the Kid, my favorite story that he told was when he got banned from the supper club and tried to get back in like 10 years later. To this day, I laugh every time I think about that story.
Well, Cole did not make my Crying Jordan Face this week, although I debated back and forth. I made my Crying Jordan Face so late this week because I really, really wanted it to be Cole, but I don't want to disrespect. I would have had to check with him, and I'm not going to bother Cole on a busy Saturday. He called Arkansas, Florida A&M, Now he's got to go all the way. Now he's in the plains. He's over there at Jordan-Hare getting ready for that game. So I don't want to bother him with that. We're just going to let that slide. I just thought it could have been funny. Aaron, give me your crying Jordan face. So we got everything out of the way. We've invited everybody to get in on this. We've given honorable mentions. Now it's time. Give us the entree. What's your crying Jordan face of the week, man?
I just pressed tweet to send out my tweet. As you all know, Brock Osweiler, and he's not my crying Jordan face of the week. Brock Osweiler, of course, was traded from the Texans to the Browns. And a lot of people thought he was going to win the job because, I mean, there's the quarterback situation in Cleveland is a mess. But DeShone Kizer won the starting job. They announced he was going to be the starter this week. And then later, then just yesterday, I believe, Osweiler was released. And, of course, he signed that huge contract, $72 million, 16 and a half per year with the Texans. So when they traded him, they got rid of his contract. Cleveland picked it up, was going to try to trade him, couldn't, thought he might win the job, then he didn't. So then they decide, let's release him. And my thought process is, why? At least let him come back and play backup. You're going to have to pay the guy $16 million anyway. So you're going to cut him. And he's not going to play, and you're still going to pay him. So Brock Osweiler, no, he's not my crying Jordan face because, yeah, he's out of a job, but he's still guaranteed $16 million from the Cleveland Browns.
Right.
My crying Jordan face is Hugh Jackson and the Browns front office for their decision to cut Brock Osweiler and still owe him $16 million.
And it's a good one, the crying Jordan faces. You picked a couple well-proportioned pictures to put those on, so it worked.
There's two of them, and when the crying Jordan face perfectly fits on a head, and like it actually looks like he's in the suit. Like those are the funniest ones.
It's one of the most gratifying things you can do. Like when you fit it perfectly underneath the hairline, and then it fits on the neckline of the shirt.
The neckline makes the picture because if you can get like the Michael Jordan's neck to perfectly fit inside someone's suit, sometimes it looks like they have just a huge head. But it's definitely worth it when the proportionality fits together.
They got like the little V-neck going on right there. If you can get the little V-neck. If you can find a picture of someone in a V-neck, you can put a Michael Jordan face on them. I'm telling you. My crying Jordan, first off, great pick there. They go right up there now with Notre Dame and Auburn as far as buying people out just to not deal with them anymore. They cut Osweiler, still have to deal with $16 million. It reminds me of Notre Dame Charlie Weiss. I think his buyout was like $18 million or something
pretty
crazy
sure
like that.
Pretty sure that Notre Dame and Kansas are both still paying Charlie Weiss. I remember 3 years ago, he was like the second highest paid coach in college football and wasn't even coaching anymore.
I think his buyout was like $18.5 million. Auburn in total, I think, paid like up to $12 million to buy out different coaches with the Gene Chizik era, but Gene himself, I think, was like a $7, $8 million buyout. So now the Browns right up there throwing away a lot of money just to not deal with someone, which rightfully so. I know that you're kind of on the other end because when Brock Osweiler played in Denver, you were kind of a fan. You liked him.
Yeah, I felt very much fell victim to the Brock Osweiler bandwagon. I thought he was going to have a great season last year, and obviously he was terrible. And I still think that, I mean, he was obviously terrible, but I don't think it's worth throwing him away. I think that he was worth keeping. At least if you're going to pay the guy that much money, at least keep him around and try to trade him, because nobody's going to want to pick up his contract, you know, for nothing.
Think about it this way. And I was never high on Brock Osweiler. I remember watching him in his final collegiate game go against Boise State in a bowl game. And they were talking about, and I was throwing shade at him on Twitter and Facebook at the time, because they were talking about how good of an NFL prospect he was because of his size and everything.
Yeah, because of his size.
I'm sitting there watching the game. I'm doing something else because it's not a competitive game. And I think I was working on a Christmas gift or something. And, you know, I'm kind of keeping an eye on the game. And I hear them mention, you know, Brock Osweiler out here. He's getting ready to go pro. He's probably going to be a good draft pick, this and that. And I just kind of lowered my eyebrows and looked at the TV. I was like, are we talking about the right guy here? I mean, because I think Kellen Moore was still the quarterback of Boise State at the time, I think. And I'm like, Kellen Moore's having a way better game. I mean, I get it. He might not fit for the pros, but to sit here and say Brock Osweiler is a great pro prospect when he's getting his ass beat by Boise State was just unreal. So I've never really, I've always kind of been on that side of the fence of not really liking Brock Osweiler. But put it this way. A couple years ago, he was the backup of a Super Bowl championship team. Fast forward a little bit. He's being cut by the three teams later. He's being cut by the 1-15 Browns. They're willing to pay him $16 million just to not look at him anymore. You know what? We don't want you to compete for this backup spot. Cody Kessler's going to be our backup. That's fine. Bye. Here's $16 million. Goodbye. We'll pay you in payments.
It's just, it just goes back to that, because you were talking about Brock Osweiler, what a great prospect he was because of his size. You could, I mean, that's exactly why Trubisky got picked as high as he did, was basically because of his upside and his measurables. I mean, if you've got, if you're a 6'5", 240-pound quarterback, you could win, you could literally start for 2 years and go 0-24 and be a top 10 pick.
You may.
If you're 5'10", if you're 5'11", 205 pounds, you go undefeated against Alabama in your career. You win four straight national championships. They're like, I don't know if this guy can make it, man. This guy, he's a little undersized, you know. But let's go with the 0-24 guy. Got so much upside. This guy's huge. You know, it's ridiculous. It is the stupidest. The NFL, the way they look at quarterbacks is the stupidest thing.
You made that.
They look at all the wrong things.
You made that sound so, so dirty. You're like, they're measurables. You disgust me. All right, my turn. My crying Jordan face of the week. The Indiana football fan base. Y'all screwed this one up big time. You guys absolutely messed this one up. Indiana was giving Ohio State a big time run for their money. Led 14-13 at the half. Hell, even late into the third quarter, they were up 21-20. Hadn't trailed yet at this point, I don't think. Well, maybe, and then I think Indiana might have put the touchdown on to take the lead. I can't remember. But they led most of the game. Late in the third quarter, Indiana fans, overrated, start chanting at Ohio State for like, I think the mics picked it up for like a solid 60 seconds. Overrated. JT Barrett, you suck. Overrated. JT Barrett was struggling. But after that chant by the wonderful Indiana fan base, Ohio State went on a 29-0 run to smoke Indiana to cover the 25-point spread. Think about that. Indiana was up 21-20 late in the third quarter. And Ohio State covered. Indiana was a 25-point dog. Was up one, leading one late into the third quarter, and Ohio State still covered, beat them by 28 points, went on a 29-0 run. Overrated. That was great stuff. That was fantastic. So, Indiana, you get my crying Jordan face of the week. Congratulations, you messed that one up. Any issues with my crying Jordan face? Do you wish I would have gone with Cole Kubelik?
Indiana was a good, I believe it was a good one because, like, just like as soon as they started that chant, you know, Ohio State proceeded to go on that 29-0 run to end the game, and just a little bit of false hope for those Indiana fans.
You know what? GIF. Arky likes saying GIF. I know that whoever created that word, it's pronounced GIF. But I feel so wrong saying GIF, but that GIF, whatever, with Jim Carrey from Liar Liar, when he's in the courtroom and he's taking a swig of water and he spits it out and he goes, oh, come on! That's what was going through my mind when they started that chant. Everything was fine. Everything was going okay. You're up 1 point late in the third quarter. Over. Oh, come on! At least wait until the fourth quarter. Oh, you got to be kidding me. And a couple minutes left in this segment, so I guess we can lead you guys into what we're going to do before the end of the hour. We're going to get into the top of the hour. We're going to start making picks. Okay, we're going to start breaking some of these games down. We're going to start making picks. We're going to start with the SEC games. We're going to start picking all the SEC games this weekend. Obviously, they're not against each other. Not yet. But some of the games you can hear us pick, well, I'm pretty sure Aaron and I both picked Arkansas to beat Florida A&M. So we're going to count that one as a victory. That was Thursday night. But Saturday, today, we got Missouri State at Missouri. You've got North Carolina State, South Carolina in Charlotte. That's a game to keep an eye on for everybody out there. We'll talk about that matchup and how really good of a matchup that's going to be. Kentucky at Southern Mississippi. Charleston Southern, oh, big name, at Mississippi State. Appy State at Georgia. Will Georgia cover the 14-point spread? That I wonder if it's still 14, but it was 14 the other day when I was looking at it. Auburn, Georgia Southern might be like 11.5 maybe. Georgia Southern going to the Plains to take on Auburn. South Alabama, Ole Miss, Vandy at MTSU. BYU at LSU, intriguing game for some. Then you got Michigan, Florida, FSU, Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia Tech, A&M, UCLA. Now, the interesting thing about those last games, the Florida game, Alabama game, A&M, Georgia, Tennessee, we're not picking those games in the SEC pick'em. So if you're waiting to hear those, wait a little longer because at the end we're going to pick our big games. Those all made it into our big games of the week. So when we get to that part of the show, you can pay attention and well, hopefully you're paying attention the entire show. But if you're specifically waiting for that pick, I don't want to get your hopes up. We're not picking those games in the SEC games, SEC segment, because those are bigger than just the SEC games. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Aaron, you and I are going to get into some of these and start picking some of these SEC games leading up to our big pick'ems. We're not doing any headgear or anything, but we do like to pick the big games to go against each other. It's the Tony Mac and the Triplet, Sports Radio 730-1039, The Ump. Welcome back, Tony Mac and the Triplet. Winding down the first hour of the show. First college football Saturday. Officially, it's week one. Last week, week zero, a term we've really come to endure on this show. We love that term. We had to endure it for a while. I wasn't sure how I felt about it. I love that term. Something we forgot to do at the beginning of the show. We tweeted it out, forgot to mention it. One of these days, we'll get it right and remember to mention it at the beginning of the show. Aaron Triplet. You're not looking at me, but I know you're listening to me. Your shirt of the week. Let's get to it. Who won the poll?
Well, it was a three-team poll again. It was between LSU, Purdue, and Arizona State. And Arizona State took home the voting. So sporting the Arizona State Sun Devils t-shirt today. And
You sound so excited about this.
I enjoy Arizona State.
Arizona State won the t-shirt contest today. Very excited. We're all very,
once again.
Very excited
once again, I'm still struggling here on this show to find the fine line between boring and excited. Because if I get too excited, we end up what happened in our promo the other day.
Well, the thing is, I'm looking at your face. You're not Bill Nye, or you're not Clear Eyes Guy in me right now. I mean, you're not that droll in the face. You look way more excited than you sound.
Maybe it's just I got to work on my delivery.
Well, your delivery,
hey guys,
your delivery is good right there. I'm just picking at you. It's just so Arizona. Who's the big winner? Arizona State won the t-shirt contest today. Really excited about that. Everybody who voted, we were very thankful. We appreciate you guys listening. Bottom of my heart, thank you so much. But it is Arizona State white t-shirt. You got it. It's a very nice shirt. It's very Aaron Triplet, friendly.
Friendly, yes.
Is what we call it. It's a plain white shirt with just the Arizona State logo, and it's very nice. It's very Aaron Triplet friendly. Go check that out on Twitter. We've tweeted it at Tony Mac Triplet, at Tony Mac UMP, and at A Trip Tennis. So tell us a little more.
Well, on the so this morning I'm getting up, I'm looking for my shirt. I've got them in several different places. It's like two or three different stacks, and I was going through and I realized, I'm missing some. I don't know. I realized it because I've got ones like Colorado. I know that I've got somewhere, and because I moved out of my parents' house when I got married, and I think I left some there. And I'm going over there today because I'm going to watch the game with my dad.
Shout out to Cindy Triplett to help Aaron find his t-shirt.
Yes, I've already asked her today, by the way. I sent her a text this morning that said, hey, random, but I think I left some of my shirts there. Do you know if they're still in like any of the drawers? She didn't answer me, but I know she's listening right now, and I know she's because, you know, moms have that magic touch. They know where everything is, and I mean, my mother is like a magnet to things that I've lost, and it's weird because I lose more things at the house that I grew up in than I lose anywhere else. Like, I go to my house, and I misplace my phone. I go to the house, and I misplace my wallet. And I go, and I'm looking for some stuff that I need, you know, whether it's for, whether it's old clothes or anything to move. And I can't find it. And it irritates me. And I'm like, and of course, I'm a horrible looker. I can't look for anything.
It's a mother's intuition. She knows that she's the last line of defense. That if
she is. And she always comes through. She always comes through. So I'm hoping that she at least has an idea of where this is. I guarantee you this is what will happen. I'll go over there. I'll be like, well, did you get my text? And she'll be like, yeah, I don't know where they are. She'll say, I don't know where they are. But really, she does. She might not know that she does know it, but she will find them. I guarantee you that today when I go over there looking for the rest of my shirts, that I will not be the one that finds them.
Well, I would agree with that. I don't think you or your dad are going to find them because you mentioned before.
My dad thinks I'm an idiot. He'll be like, son, what are you doing?
You mentioned before the show that you and your dad are making some homemade margaritas for the football games tonight. So I don't think you and your dad are going to find anything but maybe the toilet.
That'll be later tonight. We're doing some Mexican food. It'll be good for a good kickoff weekend. But I get set in my mind that I need to find something.
Matt, Cindy, save me a place. Mexican food, margaritas, I'll be there.
They love making food for people, at least all of our friends. But like I said, you know, when I look for things and when I can't find them immediately, in the first instinct is to ask my mother where they're at. And my dad is always like, son, you've got to find stuff for yourself.
Be more responsible.
My mom, actually, she just texted me and said that she did not get my message.
That's how that conversation went between you and your dad. Son, you got to be more responsible. You got to look for things yourself. You know, Dad, you're right. I got to look for my t-shirts. I'll find them. I'll make sure that I pick them up. And then...
So we have heard. I sent my mom a text this morning and said asking about my shirts. So I get a text from her just now during the middle of the show that says, I didn't get that text. And then I went back and I looked. And you know how when you have iPhones, it says it does the iMessage and whether it delivers. And I realized that my message didn't deliver. So, Mom, if you're out there listening, which now I know you are, I'm missing some of my shirts from the house. One of them is my Colorado shirt, and I'm pretty sure I got some others. But if are there any in my drawers of my dresser that's at home? Because it would be greatly appreciated.
Mom, more importantly, Antonio really wants a margarita, so if you can accommodate, that would be fantastic. He would really appreciate that. But yeah, there you have it. Aaron Triplett, he was able to find his Arizona State shirt.
Luckily, I checked this morning. I was worried that one of them might be dirty. But I guarantee you I will wear a dirty shirt on this show at some point because I forget that I have not washed one of them.
I'm disappointed. I voted for the LSU shirt, by the way. All right, before the end of this hour, we're gonna get in here. We got a couple minutes before the music starts. We're going to get through some of these SEC pick'em games. We're going to pick some of these games that are pretty easy to pick. We already picked Arkansas. They won. Missouri State, who you got?
Oh, I got Missouri. While it's an in-state battle, I don't think that'll have anything to do with it. I like Missouri.
Yeah, I think we're both going with Missouri there. We're going to leave the NC State South Carolina game alone. Kentucky Southern Miss, who you got?
I think this game will be closer than people think. I think Southern Miss will put up a good fight, but I think Kentucky will be too much.
Yeah, we're both going with Kentucky. Are we both picking Mississippi State over Charleston Southern?
Yes.
Good pick. Smart.
Simple enough, yes.
We're going to leave Appy State and Georgia alone. Auburn, Georgia Southern. More importantly, does Auburn cover the spread here?
Well, the spread is 34.5. No. If you're taking the points, you're taking Georgia Southern because opening week game against a solid Sun Belt team, I think they're going to score some points tonight. I think Auburn's going to be a little bit skittish on offense at the beginning. I think they will pull away for sure, but it's not going to be by 35 points. So take Georgia Southern if you're taking the spread. But Auburn will win, but they're not going to cover.
I disagree. I actually think Auburn's going to cover. We had a Georgia Southern guy on Tom Abraham's show this past week, and he covers pretty much the entire Sun Belt. And he was mentioning that while I think Georgia Southern has a disciple, Paul Johnson, over there teaching up that triple option, they're missing a lot of guys from a couple of years ago when they were really good, and even last year. So I think that they're going to struggle really bad, and I think Auburn's going to handle business in that game. Up until that interview, I was with you. I didn't think that Auburn would cover, but now I actually do think Auburn's going to take care of business. Now the other SEC games we have left, we're going to leave them alone because – we're going to get into those at the top of the next hour. You'll hear some music here just shortly telling me and Aaron, hey, get off the air. Enough shout-outs to your mother. Enough teasing Aaron about being droll. We got to get out of here. So that's it, Aaron and I, for the SEC games. We picked Arkansas, Missouri, Kentucky, Mississippi State, Auburn, Ole Miss. I think Auburn's going to cover. How bold is that? Is that bold? Do you think? I know Aaron thinks it's bold. If you think it's bold, if you think I'm stupid, let us know on Twitter, at TonyMacTriplet, at TonyMacUMP, at ATripTennis. If you found his shirts, let him know there. Hour number two next, big games of the week, SEC games coming up next. 730, 1039 The Ump.
It's Tony Mac and the Triplet. With your hosts, Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplet. Specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins! Touchdown, Auburn!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach! The good talent wants to play for him!
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are. Tony Mac and the Triplet.
Tony Mac in the Triplet Hour number two, week one of college football. Oh, Cole Kublik on the TV again. Love it. Oh, it's so good. The best part is I'm not worried about the official. I'm bulky enough to handle him. He goes right back into his stance talk. The official, if looks could kill, Cole would be dead. But fortunately for Cole, he's pretty good size, so he could take him. Everybody getting a big kick out of this. I know Cole's loving the coverage on this. Good sense of humor there, so that's good. All right. Aaron, if you would, you know, hey, it's okay. Your mom will find the shirts. It's okay. We're back to the show here. All right. Well, we picked the easy games already. We went ahead and picked the easy SEC games. All right. Let's jump into the first interesting matchup in the SEC. NC State, South Carolina. Very intriguing, especially so that Cole Kublik picked NC State to go to his college football playoff. Honestly, not sure if Cole believes that or not. If he made that an official pick, then he probably does. But it's just so crazy. He's a guy that watches more film than anybody. So he sees something. And that was a lot of people's dark horse, a dark horse team to really make a name and upset some guys. And Cole went ahead and put him in his college football playoff, mainly because he loves that defensive line. Probably one of the best defensive lines in the country. But it's interesting when you're matching up other sides of the ball. NC State returns a 3,000-yard passer, returns his top three targets. They lose an 1,100-yard rusher, but he returns his top three targets. None of them, I think, had more than 500-600 yards receiving. And then on the other side, you look at South Carolina. Bentley comes in. He was only like a 1,400-yard passer, 60% completion. They returned their Dowdle, I think is his name, their running back, and they returned their top three targets. So, a lot of young guys for South Carolina. They're sophomores and everything else. But I thought I'd messed up calling them Mississippi State, but I was looking at Mississippi State when I said South Carolina. Thought I said Mississippi State, but I had it right. For South Carolina, some young guys out there. Very, very intriguing. Like my gut says go with South Carolina and Bentley. But at the same time, with all the hype around NC State, knowing how good that defensive line is going to be, I want to pick NC State. What do you think?
Well, I think this is going to be one of the more interesting games on the slate. But I mean, South Carolina, they got a lot of young guys. Bentley's first year as a full time starter. I just don't know how much I actually trust Will Muschamp as their head coach. Number one. Number two. I think NC State is poised for a good year, especially defensively. But, I mean, I definitely don't think they're playoff material by any means. But I think they're an 8 or 9 win team. I think that if one of the big boys in the ACC is going to get upset, it's probably going to be by NC State. But I just think that NC State being at home, is it neutral or are they at home?
It's in Charlotte.
Okay, so it is a neutral game, but I'm going to take NC State. I'm going to take the Wolfpack in this one. But I do think, and the spread's like 5. I would not be shocked if it was less than 5 points. But I also wouldn't be shocked if NC State kind of pulled away, because I just don't. I think that the youth of South Carolina is going to hurt, and I think that NC State.
I've got the same feeling that you're kind of hinting at. I've got the feeling that if South Carolina is going to win this game, I think it's going to be a close 3-4 point game. But I think if NC State wins it, I think they win it running away. I think they pull away probably mid-third quarter and just start dominating. Maybe not necessarily running the score up in the fourth quarter, but their run game and everything else is going to be dominant enough to just start eating at some of the clock and the quarterback experienced enough to come back and make some big first downs and keep the ball out of South Carolina and Bentley's hands. But the interesting part is as I mentioned before, for South Carolina, you got Debo Samuel coming back, junior wide receiver. Led the team last year, 783 receiving yards. Hayden Hurst, I believe, he's the junior tight end. He's coming back, 616 yards. Brian Edwards coming back for South Carolina for his sophomore season. He was the third leading receiver on the team. And then the big difference here is NC State loses an 1,100-yard rusher. They lose their leading rusher. South Carolina returns Rico Dowdle, I think is how you say it. It wasn't 1,000-yard back, but he had 133 carries, 764 yards, 6 touchdowns, good enough for about 5.5 yards average there. South Carolina is going to be able to compete offensively. On the other side, when you look what NC State's returning, minus their running back, they're returning an offense that was very well intact from a year ago. Very sharp, had chances to beat Clemson, had a chance to beat Clemson in the past couple of years or in Florida State, but offense that showed signs of competing against the big boys. But on the other end, anywhere Will Muschamp's gone, sure, he struggled as a head coach, but that defense has been very, very good. And this is his, second year now officially? At South Carolina. So signs are pointing and telling me that South Carolina is going to play a lot tougher than I want to think they will. And that's why I'm going with South Carolina. I think the Gamecocks are going to win this close by a field goal.
I think that the defense is going to be enough to keep him in it for a little while. I think Bentley's going to have to really put the offense on his back and try to make some plays. And I just think that NC State's going to get after him. I think this game is going to be won and lost with turnovers. And I think NC State forces a couple more than South Carolina does. And I think that's how they ultimately win this game. So I'm going the other way. I'm going with NC State.
And that's fair. And the biggest key to the game for South Carolina, since I have them winning, is, and I guess the biggest key for you for NC State would be forcing some turnovers. I would say protect Jake Bentley. Limit those turnovers. You're going up against one of the best defensive lines in the country. They're going to get after the quarterback. You've got to give him time to throw. Even if they're not sacking and forcing fumbles, you can't let Bentley get under pressure. Bentley's got to have time to throw. He's still a young guy. He was supposed to be a high school senior last year, and instead he was starting for the South Carolina Gamecocks halfway through the season. So he's obviously talented enough and a little bit beyond his years, but he's still a younger guy. He's going to make mistakes. You've got to give him time to throw the football. All right, Aaron, a little different on that one. That's not an official pick. I mean, we're picking our SEC games. We're keeping up with that, but that's not going against our official record. So you're safe. You're safe there. I'll give you that one. But the next game, Georgia, Appalachian State. Now, I know yesterday was the 10-year anniversary of the upset in Ann Arbor. The upset at the Big House happened 10 years ago yesterday, where Appalachian State upset Michigan, and everybody just talks. When you go over that play over and over and over again, and how Appalachian State did the unthinkable, and how Michigan, you really start to get the feeling that people are thinking, wow, Michigan really had a bad year to get beat by Appalachian State that season. They must have been really bad. No, they really weren't. Appalachian State was very, 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 very good, because that Michigan team went on to beat the Heisman-winning quarterback in Tim Tebow and the Florida Gators in their bowl game. They weren't awful. Chad Henne was their quarterback. Mike Hart was their running back. But this Appalachian State team, because of that win, has propelled themselves to all kinds of different heights. But I don't think they've beaten a Power 5 opponent since that game. Now, I don't think they're going to beat Georgia. I think this is a different tone of the game. I think Georgia's going to win this game easily. Or maybe not easily, but it's an easy decision to pick Georgia for me. Does Georgia cover the spread, though? That's what everybody wants to know. That's the interesting concept of this game. I think it's safe to say that you and I are both going with Georgia here. But do they cover?
I think the spread's about 13.5 right now. I think it's gone up a little bit. I think they do. But I don't think it's by as much as people think. I'm thinking about me. I think Appalachian State will probably put up some points. Appalachian State, I think, they're my prediction to win the Sun Belt again. Or at least I think they had a share for it last year. But I'm predicting them to win the Sun Belt again. Very, very good team. Underrated small conference team. But I do think that Georgia covers. I don't think it's by, I don't think they cover it by a ton, but I do think they cover the 13.5 point spread. So I'm taking Georgia, and I'm taking them to cover.
Yeah, I'm taking Georgia to cover also. I think that when you got two big backs like that in the backfield, two experienced senior backs with Sony Michel and Nick Chubb in the backfield, and then you've got a quarterback who last year a lot of people questioned his heart for football, whether he was really into it. And this year so far through spring and from what a lot of guys, a lot of writers and a lot of insiders are telling us is that yeah, he's completely changed his mind. The quarterback competition behind Eason with Jacob Fromm and some other guys who Jacob Fromm apparently has been very, very, very good in challenging Eason and stepping up Eason's not ability, but his want to play the game and his want to be the starting quarterback of Georgia. So I think you're going to see a different Eason, a newly born Eason. I think you're going to see the same Chubb and Michelle when they're healthy. I think they're going to go in there and dominate. And I think Appalachian State might be able to keep it interesting for the first quarter or so, maybe, slow Georgia down. We've seen that a lot already. We've seen FAU give Navy a run for their money yesterday in the first half. We saw Utah State take Wisconsin to the half yesterday, tied at 10 before Wisconsin pulled away. We saw Ohio State trailing Indiana 21-20 almost at the end of the third quarter before they pulled away and scored 29 unanswered. So it's not far-fetched to think that Appalachian State could hold Georgia to, 14 points in the first half before Georgia really tears away and beats the doors off of them, which I think is going to happen, but I think Appalachian State keeps it close. Going with the Bulldogs. I'm going with Uga. What number of Uga are they on now? What dog number is that?
I want to say it's like 6 or 7.
Going with Uga 7, 6, 7, whichever one.
I'm not sure, though.
Yeah, him too. I'm going with all of them. All right, Vandy at MTSU. Very, very interesting game. I've been back and forth. I thought MTSU was going to win this game. Now I'm back thinking maybe Vandy because I like Derek Mason. Maybe you can persuade me. Who do you think's got this one, Aaron? I know we're going back and forth, who you think, what you think, but I don't know too much about MTSU's football team. Vanderbilt watched them last year, inspired. Derek Mason can inspire them in certain games. Is it enough to go on the road? It's not very far. It's just MTSU down the road. Is Vandy going to go in there and take care of business? A few years ago, I think MTSU had beaten Vandy maybe 2 or 3 times, and then Vandy's kind of owned that series the last few years. Does MTSU turn this thing around?
Well, a lot of times when Vanderbilt opens up with one of these Conference USA kind of teams, they get beat because a couple years ago they got beat by Western Kentucky and Brandon Dowdy. But it's always close. And I think this game is going to be close. I think it's going to be competitive because I think MTSU in their respective division, I think, is picked to finish second to Western Kentucky. I think this game's going to be close, but I do think that Vanderbilt gets this done primarily because of Ralph Webb on the ground. The guy can make plays. They're going to lean on him, and I think he's going to get the tough yards. And what's required, they're going to lean on him when they've got a lead in the fourth quarter. So I think that they are going to take care of business, but I think it's going to be very competitive, especially early, and going to be competitive all the way through, really. And it's going to be up to Ralph Webb to kind of melt this clock. And I think Middle Tennessee is going to know that it's coming, but I don't think they're going to be able to stop him. So I think they're going to lean on him the entire game. So I like the Commodores in this one to get the win.
Yeah, Ralph Webb, a 1,200-yard back a year ago. They also returned Kyle Shermer, their starting quarterback. He's experienced. He didn't have the best year last year, only completed about 54% of his passes, 2,400 yards, 9 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. But he's an experienced guy. He'll be a junior this year. This will be his third season. At Vandy, he was the starter in all 13 games last year, 6 the year before. So he's got 19 games under his belt. So I like this guy going in on the road. He's familiar with this team. He played him a year ago. You got some receivers. Vandy doesn't have the best selection when it comes to that, but I don't think it's going to matter. I think Ralph Webb is going to be a real difference, as you said, in this game. And I got Vandy as well, which will be good. Vandy's the I think – everybody in the SEC can pull for Vandy. You know what I mean? Because they're never really a threat to you, but when they're not playing you, I think everybody just pulls for them because they like Vandy. And I just love the culture that Derek Mason set. Like, at SEC Media Days, he was one of the only coaching interviews that I, like, was compelled to watch. I was like, I got to watch Derek Mason. I love that guy. And then on the other end, when he beat Tennessee, I was like, the best part was watching him after the game. He really inspires his guys, and I think – I don't know if they're going to make a bowl game this year. I doubt it, but I think they at least go on the road. I think they at least win this game. It is at MTSU, but it's not really a road game. They don't live very far from each other. All right, the last one. The last SEC game before we get into our big game picks. BYU. LSU. In the Superdome. That's right. This game got moved to New Orleans because of Hurricane Harvey. Tropical Storm Harvey, whatever it's classified now, as J.J. Watt is beating it with his charity. I mean, I think as of yesterday, he had already raised over $12 million for this thing. So J.J.'s got Hurricane Harvey beat. But while he's taking care of business, BYU and LSU move to the Superdome. Now, the only reason that I'm iffy on LSU covering this game is because what everybody else is saying about BYU. I watched BYU play last week. Was not impressed at all. And I've watched BYU a lot over the last few years with their you know, thrilling comebacks. A couple years ago when they had two Hail Marys to end two different games. A couple seasons ago. Everybody's saying that BYU didn't show much. They didn't show much on purpose, I guess. They weren't trying to show too much last week. But I don't know. I was not impressed with BYU at all. Now, saying that, LSU, I think LSU's going to struggle big time this season because Danny Etling, I don't think, is very good. We've seen Danny Etling hit his ceiling. He's not going to get better. That is the Danny Etling we're going to see all year long. What you see today, he's not going to get much better. He could very easily get worse, but he didn't have a very high ceiling, and that ceiling has been reached. Danny Etling is there. That's what you're getting. I think he's got enough to beat BYU, especially with Darius Geis in the backfield. He does only have pretty much DJ Chark, the only proven guy we know of to throw to. But I think that's enough. I think LSU's going to go in there and handle business, and I think they beat BYU by at least 17. What do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, I think that LSU isn't really going to have much of a problem. They, because... mainly because BYU didn't impress me at all in the opening week against Portland State. Now, LSU is missing Arden Key, their leading sack leader from last year. I think he broke the school record for sacks in a season. I think he had 11 or 12. They're going to miss him in this game with an injury. But I think that they're just going to lean on Darius Geis. I think he goes for – I think he's probably going to go – he goes for at least 100 today, if not 150. So I think he has a monster game. And I think they kind of went it running away. I think they've got good enough defense with what Orgeron's put in place and just kind of the culture that LSU brings defensively. And they're going to play well defensively and, you know, just kind of shut BYU down. I really just don't see, barring just – some kind of montage of turnovers by LSU, that they lose this game or find this game giving them any trouble, because They got it, obviously, like you said, moved because of Hurricane Harvey from Houston, where it was going to be the Advocare Texas kickoff. I think it still technically is, but now they moved it to New Orleans, right in LSU's backyard. So I think every sign points to LSU kind of blowing this game open. So I think they cover as well. I think the spread's about 14.5. I think they definitely cover.
How fortunate is it for LSU? They've been on the right side of weather delaying games so many times. Well, seemingly so. Last year against Florida, they got that game moved out of Gainesville into their home stadium. They kind of botched that by losing to Florida. Couldn't get guys in the end zone there at the end of the game. But they got that one moved a few years ago. I can't remember who it was, Nicholls State or something like that. That game got at halftime, I think, was called for lightning, something crazy like that. A couple years ago, they didn't play a game at all. Right before kick, that might have been the game I'm talking about. Right before kickoff, with some lightning out there, the game.
One game got completely canceled, and they only played 11 games. And then one game got called after I think three quarters. They were up by so many points, they just called the game and gave them the win.
So many times this has happened before. Their spring game. I mean, anywhere LSU goes. Watch out for weather because it usually hits them. And BYU last week, 20-6 over Portland State. But tell me one player on Portland State that you think, oh, well, this is why it was only 20-6. You don't know. It's Portland freaking State. The only guy that knows is Cole Kublik because he's watched film on everybody. He's got my film, and I've never even played football. And last week against that Portland State football team, Tanner Mangum, who I do like Tanner Mangum, 16-27, 194 yards, one touchdown. Those are decent stats. Those would be decent stats against LSU. Probably what he's going to have. It's not going to be much more. You're going to need more than that to beat LSU. Best name in the country, by the way, right here. BYU's running back, Squally Canada. Squally Canada. Yeah. Aaron did the perfect blinking white guy face just then when I said Squally Canada, 16 carries, 98 yards, one touchdown. They're winning strictly on that name. Squally. What possesses a mother to say you look like... I would be insulted when I grow up because a lot of the times in movies, the heartfelt moments when they look down at their baby and they smile and they had a name picked out, like, oh, it's baby John. And she's like, no, it's not John. Look at him. He doesn't look like a John. He looks like a Henry. Can you imagine thinking about that moment you came out, and it's a very intimate moment for your family. Your mom looks down. No. He looks like a Squally. I would be very upset. Squally Canada, BYU's running back. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to start picking the big games of today. We've got Michigan, Florida State. Florida State would have a tough schedule there. Florida, Michigan, Florida State, Alabama, Texas A&M, UCLA, Tennessee, Georgia Tech, and West Virginia, Virginia Tech, all coming up after this break right here on Tony Mac the Triplet, Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump. Welcome back, Tony Mac and the Triplet. Oh, that's a good bump. That's a good bump to get me excited for these picks. A little altar bridge there for you. All right. We picked the SEC games. We got those out of the way. Some pretty decent games. We got some good ones there. Some not so good. Some no-brainers. Missouri State, Missouri. But now we got the side dishes out of the way. We got our vegetables done. Now it's time to get to that big meaty steak. It's the entree time. We're going to start, Aaron, with this afternoon, 2:30, Michigan, Florida. I know you gave away your pick earlier, but remind everybody who it is, why you're picking them, who you got. And to remind everybody, this is the segment now. This is mine and Aaron's pick'em segment. We pick 4 to 6 big games, usually, every week, and we go against each other. So this is big. We take this very seriously because at the end of the year, we're going to tally up our total and our big game picks. Winner's probably going to get a trophy. We're going to figure that out. Loser's probably going to buy said trophy. And so this is huge. If you guys want to get in on this, if you guys want to see how you stack up, tweet at us, at TonyMacUMP, at A-Trip Tennis, at TonyMacTriplet on Twitter. All right, Aaron, Michigan, Florida. Who do you have and why?
I got Michigan winning this game. Like I said earlier in my headlines, I had a McElwain meltdown because of all the controversy, suspensions, everything surrounding Florida. I've got Michigan blowing out Florida in this game. I know that Michigan only returned 6 starters from last year's team and only one of them on defense, but I really think they're going to reload defensively, have a good defensive game plan for a Florida team who's weak on offense, who doesn't have their best offensive weapon. I think Michigan's going to blow Florida out. I think Chris Evans in the backfield for Michigan has a very effective game. I think they're able to lean on him, and I know Florida's going to have a good defense. Good defense is going to be ready, but I think that because they're going to be out on the field so much because their offense can't do anything, I think Michigan will eventually be able to kind of wear the Florida defense down. And I think that Michigan's going to score defensively, force some turnovers, and I think they win in blowout fashion. So I got Michigan.
Blowout fashion. I disagreed with you on the blowout fashion part just because I don't feel like Michigan deserves that kind of respect with all the question marks they got coming. I know Jim Harbaugh can recruit some great talent. Don't get me wrong, but they haven't done anything out there yet. They lost their leading rusher from a year ago in Davion Smith. They return Chris Evans, who he's had 600 yards. It'll be okay. I mean, they return some all right guys, but they're losing their 3 top targets from a year ago for Wilton Spate, a guy whose stats look a lot better than what he did. He was 61% completion, 2,500 yards, 18 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, but he's losing his top 3 targets. And if you go look at this guy's passing chart, it's telling. It wasn't that great. And on the other end, I think Michigan's going to have to run the ball. Against this Florida team who's got Duke Dawson back there at free safety lurking at any moment, you're going to have to run the ball. Chris Evans, one of the running backs from a year ago that is returning, he's going to have a lot on his shoulders in this game because I think Wilton Spate's going to be limited. I don't think Wilton Spate's going to look very good in this game. But with that being said, I'm going with Michigan also just because Florida missing so much. You're missing your lead receiver in Antonio Callaway. And he's not only your leading receiver from a year ago, but he's also your best return guy. He makes big plays in 2 different phases of the game. And then turn it around in the backfield, Jordan Scarlett, your leading rusher from a year ago, is gone. I mean, you got Piron back there, but it's not Samaje, it's his cousin. Totally different. I think Florida's offense has always struggled. I think this was their better year to figure this thing out with some of the quarterbacks they have. Felipe Franks is getting the start, but I think you will see some Malik Zaire in there because I think you're going to have to put in a quarterback that can make plays on his own with his feet. I don't know if Felipe Franks can do that. I haven't seen him play. I know he's a big guy. He's supposed to have a big-time arm, but I know Zaire can get out there and move his feet a little bit and make plays on the ground when you're limited on some of your targets that you're going to have. Some of these guys might be dropping balls and be deflated. You're going to have to do things on your own. So I think you're going to have to see Malik Zaire in there. But Michigan's also, even though they're not returning very much, one big name I think to look out for that I think is going to give Felipe Franks trouble, and that's Rashawn Gary. I think Rashawn Gary for that Michigan defensive line is going to be huge in this game. And ultimately, I think it moved up. The line moved up to 5 points. I think Michigan covers that. They win by a touchdown. I'm also going with the Wolverines. Now, we're going to save the Florida State-Alabama game to last, obviously. Texas A&M, UCLA, it's the hot seat bowl. Who you got?
I don't know if I see Kevin Sumlin or Jim Mora Jr. lasting past this season. They might both last till the end, but they're definitely not there. I don't think either of them is going to be the coach at their respective school next season. So I agree with you with it being the hot seat bowl. Texas A&M going on the road to take on UCLA. And Texas A&M got the better of UCLA last year in overtime. They got kind of lucky to win that game. I really thought Texas A&M might blow them out, but they didn't. Ended up going to overtime, being a good game. This year, I've got UCLA. I'm going to go ahead and say I got UCLA to win over Texas A&M, mainly because I don't like Texas A&M. I don't really think they bring anything to the table that's really going to be very valuable. They lost their best player, Myles Garrett. They lost a saving grace in Trevor Knight, who basically saved last season, made it, you know, respectable. You know, everybody think, you know, 8-5, which is what they go every year, it feels like. I think they're going to be lucky to go this year. I've got UCLA. I think Josh Rosen is a difference. I don't think it's going to be a blowout by any means. I think it's going to be pretty close either way, because I don't think either of these teams are that good. But I think Rosen's a difference just because he's got some really good experience, 2 years under his belt, when all that Texas A&M's going to put out there is Jake Kubiak. So I've got UCLA. I think Rosen gets it done for the Bruins at home against Texas A&M.
When you're starting, you mentioned, I'm glad that's a good starting point for me. You mentioned saving grace in Trevor Knight, which he was. He absolutely was. Now you're back to what you were going to be stuck with. If you're not familiar, that you had Kyle Allen and Kyler Murray both getting some snaps at A&M, both very young guys, and both of them, within a week, transferred away from A&M. They were screwed. They had nobody. They didn't have a quarterback. Both of those quarterbacks tried to transfer to Oklahoma. Oklahoma took Kyler Murray, who is now the backup to Baker Mayfield, and Kyle Allen, I think, starting at Houston, I believe, is where he's starting this year. So he'll be over there. And now who are you stuck with? Your starting quarterback is going to be a guy by the name of Nick Starkel? Are you going to tell me in a big game against UCLA where both coaches are on the hot seat, you're going to go out there and trust a guy named Nick Starkel? I don't think so. Sometimes you can just tell by these guys' names what you're going to get. I think neither team, coming out of the Pac-12, UCLA, over the past few years we've seen, they don't have defense. Pac-12 is kind of like the Big 12, a lot of high-scoring games. But the difference in this game is UCLA at least has an offense. They've got Josh Rosen, quarterback. He was hurt a year ago. Looked okay. But I think ultimately they're going to come in, and the big difference is going to be they have an offense with an experienced quarterback. And A&M doesn't. A&M's choosing between three guys, and from what I see, they are going with Nick Starkel. So I have UCLA as well. Aaron, I'm going to answer this phone blinking to my left here, and you are going to give me your insight on Tennessee and Georgia Tech. What you got?
Well, initially I figured that I had Tennessee written down completely as my pick to win. You know, they're ranked. They have the edge. And
Darren?
Then I got...
Okay, I'm going to put you through, all right, buddy?
Then I got... sorry, Antonio was on the phone, and it was just...
It's okay.
It's kind of got a little confusing. But anyway, I had picked Tennessee initially. I was fully prepared to take Tennessee, completely, you know, ready. And then I got to thinking, well, what if this happens? What about this? What about the quarterback questions? What about the fact that Butch Jones is still the head coach? What about all these things? And here at the very last minute, I am changing my pick from Tennessee to Georgia Tech.
You're a smart, smart man for that. I'll give you my insight on that game in just a second, but we're going to go to the phones. We got Darren on the line. Darren, what's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, what's going on, guys? What about that Nick Starkel guy? Who?
Exactly. Who is Nick Starkel? You can't trust a team going forward with a quarterback named Nick Starkel, right? All right, we're going to have to cut Daryl there. Sorry, Daryl, your phone's cutting out. We can't understand what you're saying. If you want to call back and give it another shot, we'll do that. But he agrees with us. Who the heck is Nick Starkel? You got to go with Josh Rosen on that side of the ball.
Is he the starter?
From what I read a couple days ago, he was named the starter. It's not going to be Hubenak, who has at least some experience. It's going to be three-star quarterback Nick Starkel, starting for the Texas A&M Aggies, which I think is just spells doom. I think that is the end of the Sumlin era.
Sumlin might need to just have his bags packed.
Yeah, I think it's the end. I don't think they're going to fire him right away. I don't think they're going to fire him after this game.
But by the end of the season,
he'll be gone.
He won't be the coach anymore.
I don't know if there's any school that I can see firing a coach midseason. I don't know that we're going to see a midseason fire like we saw Les Miles last year. At least a big name Power Five guy. I don't think we're going to see that. It'll be really interesting if we do. Like Tennessee will have to start like 0-5 or something like that for that to happen, or 2-3, or maybe not even 2-3, 1-4, something like that. It'd have to be crazy. But speaking of this Tennessee Georgia Tech game. If you were listening to headlines earlier, my headline was losing is such a butch. And I think that's what we're going to see. I think Georgia Tech's going to win this game. I know that their leading rusher has been suspended, but it's a triple option team. You plug the next man in. That's what Paul Johnson does. He recruits guys that are just as good as you are at running this system. Like me and Aaron could go in there and run for 500 yards this season. The way that offense is set up, Tennessee is just plagued and riddled with injuries and suspensions. You got their star linebacker out for the game, out for the season in Darren Kirkland Jr. So now not only are you worried about this game, you're worried about every game going forward. A guy who's supposed to come in there and help stop the run, something towards the end of the year that Tennessee was not good at whatsoever. Towards the end of the year, the Tennessee's defense fell to mush, and they were lucky enough to have an offense that could keep up with people, but that ultimately spelled doom for them in the Vanderbilt game and the South Carolina game also, I believe. So already going forward, I didn't really trust them. They got some offensive linemen returning, but some of the starters and some of the backups have been hurt. I didn't trust that offensive line going forward anyway. I didn't think they were very good to begin with. Like Cole Kublik has a great promo on here. Talking about Tennessee's offensive line. Well, you got eight returning starters or however many you have. What kind of football are you playing? You don't have four good ones. So like, you know, it doesn't matter how many you have returning. They're not very good. And then you look at the injuries. You got offensive tackle Chance Hall. He's out for the season. Offensive tackle I can't pronounce this guy's name. Caron Colbert out with a knee injury. Whether these guys are, and left tackle Drew Richmond suspended for this game, whether they're starters or not, that at least takes away some of your depth. And then you've got your wide receiver Jaquez Jones. That's a season-ending knee injury. That's a big one too because you're breaking in a brand new quarterback. I think that Tennessee is doomed. I think Georgia Tech pulls away towards the end of this game because of that run game is going to be brutal. And Tennessee might have a spark here and there to try to keep them in this game. But I think Georgia Tech's going to win this football game. And I think there's no question about it. I'm going with the Yellow Jackets. And Aaron, we haven't picked against each other yet. I'm very disappointed in that. We're
going
to go to our...
I thought we were going to because, I fully planned to pick Tennessee. I thought it was going to be really, really close. But then something inside me, you know, I got to thinking about this game, you know, more in detail, about the little aspects of it. Like, you know, like you said, all the injuries for Tennessee, having to break in a new quarterback. Of course, Georgia Tech's breaking in a new quarterback, and they're pretty banged up too, while also missing their leading rusher to a suspension. So I think it's going to be just kind of a weird game. And this is one of those games, and I've said it before when we've had our show, you know, we had our podcast, this is just one of those games that you can kind of see and kind of think that just something bizarre is going to happen in this game that's going to swing it one way or the other. That's the way that I feel about it. I think it could be, you know, a fumble return for a touchdown, some kind of missed replay review, a tipped pass that's caught for either, like I said, an interception for a turnover or a catch for a touchdown. Something weird is going to happen in this game to swing it. And I think it's going to go Georgia Tech's favor. I think they're going to run the ball down the stretch. And I just don't think that whoever steps out on the field for Tennessee at quarterback in Dormandy, I just don't think that he's going to be able to get it done. Like I said, going to be very close. It's not going to shock me at all if Tennessee wins, but I think Georgia Tech's going to come in and run the football and win this game in some kind of weird fashion. So I've got the Yellow Jackets in this one.
That's a great place to stop right there. So far, we've picked the same three games, same three teams. Crazy enough, you pointed out earlier that Every big game we have, except for West Virginia, Virginia Tech, involves the SEC. We've picked against the SEC three times already. This was a year that I expect the SEC to get better, and I still do. But these are some of the teams that have big defensive question marks, and the SEC thrives on being good defenses, and I just don't think you're going to see that with some of these teams. Tennessee, I don't think, is going to be that great defensively. Florida, always very good defensively, but their downfall has been all these suspensions, and that gets into your depth, and you're getting rid of some of your best players. So I still think the SEC is going to be a lot better than they were a year ago. I expect them to be, but the biggest problem here is some of these games that we picked against, only one team completely healthy, I still think would have lost, and that's A&M. If Tennessee was at full strength, maybe they have a chance. If Florida didn't suspend 10 players, I think they beat Michigan, and I think it's no question. But so that's the reason why I, at least, have picked against the SEC three times, two of those being injuries and suspensions. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we got two games left to pick. We've got West Virginia, Virginia Tech, Alabama, Florida State. That's right here on Tony Mack and the Triplets, Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump. Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplets, Blink 182. We're pulling bumper music right out of my phone library, it sounds like. Welcome back. Getting into the last few minutes, about 7-8 minutes here left in the show, so we're going to get right into it. Aaron, West Virginia, Virginia Tech. Who you got, man?
Like I said earlier with the headline segment, I think this is going to be the Black Diamond thriller. Black Diamond, of course, is they battle for the Black Diamond Trophy. It's their first meeting since 2005. So it's been 12 years since they played. The last time they played, Marcus Vick, brother of Michael Vick, was playing quarterback at Virginia Tech when they beat Pat White and Steve Slayton of Virginia Tech 34-17. And that was Pat White and Steve Slayton's West Virginia team. Of course, Rich Rod was the head coach. That was their only loss that season. They went on to run the table and then beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. So that was the last time that West Virginia and Virginia Tech played against one another. So it's really cool to see them coming back and play each other again. Like I said earlier, you know, these conference realignment and all this changes and stuff has brought and kind of gotten rid of a lot of these really good rivalries. And it's good to see one of them come back. Because I think that after that year was when Virginia Tech left the Big East to go to the ACC, I believe, after that season. And so now, coming back, you know, redshirt freshman Josh Jackson is starting for Virginia Tech. Of course, last year it was Gerard Evans. Of course, he went to the NFL draft. I think that Josh Jackson, he's an athletic guy. I think he's going to make enough plays for Virginia Tech to win this game. But like I said, it's going to be a thriller. This game's going to be decided in the final second. Something is going to give in this game at the end, whether it's a late touchdown run, pass, or something by Virginia Tech, or a turnover by West Virginia. I think Will Grier, the Florida transfer, is going to play well for West Virginia, but I think that he carries them, but I think they fall just short. I think this is an exciting game, back and forth the whole way. Grab your popcorn for this one, because I think this is going to be one of the best game of the weekend as far as, you know, pure football excitement. But I like Virginia Tech to win it in the waning moments.
Interesting enough. I like what you're saying. I think it does come down to the last possession. Whoever does have the ball last will probably win, but I feel a little bit better about it being West Virginia because or Virginia Tech playing West Virginia, because West Virginia, out of any team in the Big 12, plays pretty good defense. Them and TCU typically have a pretty good defense. As far as weapons coming back for either of these teams, I'm more familiar with West Virginia, obviously, because I'm a Big 12 guy, but you've got senior running back Justin Crawford, who was a 1,000-yard back a year ago. So West Virginia, and then you've got Shelton Gibson, who was almost 1,000-yard receiver a year ago. You've got weapons coming back. I think this is a really good game. I'm not necessarily saying it's really high scoring. It might break into the 30s. I don't think you're going to see 49-56 or anything. So it'll be a pretty high scoring game. But Aaron, I got to tell you,
you done messed up, Aaron.
Because I'm going with
whole time.
I'm going with West Virginia in this one. I think the mobility of Virginia Tech's young guy is going to be problematic, for West Virginia. But I think Will Grier, with at least some college experience, looked very good at Florida. Seemed to be the Florida quarterback that they were missing. Now moved on to West Virginia. Hasn't played since 2015. I think he's the guy that gets the job done. I like West Virginia in this one. First game of the season, Aaron, that we picked against each other.
And I'm getting to put my little stars next to that game. Like, because, you know, I talked about how I wrote it on a legal pad. This year, I've upgraded. I'm using my iPad, and I've got everything written down. I've got my picks highlighted, and you just picked West Virginia, so I changed the font color. You know, a few red stars going next to West Virginia.
I wonder if it's going to happen in this next one. We got about 3 minutes. Give me your best rundown you can, giving me a little bit of room. Alabama, Florida State, big game of the night. Who you got?
Okay. Well, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Alabama's going to win this game. I think it's going to start a little slower than – I mean, Alabama's undefeated under Nick Saban in openers. Florida State's undefeated under Jimbo Fisher in openers. Something's got to give, and it's going to be Florida State. Alabama's going to run the football. They're going to control the game. I think it might be close for a half, competitive. Florida State's defense is going to keep them in it for a while, but eventually they're just going to be on the field too much. Alabama runs the ball in the second half, kind of takes over. I think DeAndre Francois does not have a very good game throwing the football. I think he probably throws a couple interceptions leading to some Alabama scores. So I like Alabama by comfortable 10 points in this game down the stretch, at least by 10. Not a blowout, but definitely not close either.
Well, I'm glad I used my soundbite on you then in the West Virginia game, because we're not picking against each other in this one. Alabama is absolutely going to win this football game. I think we're going to see the same Jalen Hurts that we saw last year, though. I do think he progresses very well throughout the season, but I think in this game we're going to see the same Jalen Hurts. He's going to struggle finding some guys downfield, but he's going to be able to run the ball so effectively. The rest of the Alabama running backs are going to be able to run the ball so effectively. He's going to have some wide open shots like he had at O.J. Howard in the national championship game. He's going to find some busted plays in the backfield, but other than that, I think he'll probably struggle throwing downfield. He was not a very good downfield passer a year ago. It's not going to matter. It's not going to matter. Brian DeBall is going to come in there, and they're going to run this freaking football down Florida State's throat. Alabama's going to pull away, and when this defense is going to be stout enough. DeAndre Francois, I've heard all week about, and I love DeAndre Francois, one of my favorite college football players, how all mobile quarterbacks beat Alabama. He's not the best mobile quarterback. I mean, he's not really fast or anything. He's a tough guy. His biggest outline for DeAndre Francois is how tough this guy is. I saw him two times last year get knocked down, shouldn't have gotten back up and played the game, came back in and almost won the game, did come back in and beat Miami. Very tough guy, but I think Aaron's right. He's a gritty guy. They beat Michigan last year, and he was like 9 of 27 or something like that. He might struggle. He doesn't turn it over that often, but against this Alabama defense, I do think he makes a couple costly mistakes. The margin of error against this defense is very, very small. Francois makes those mistakes. 34-17. I got it. It does go over. They do go over the 49-point over-under. Alabama covers this spread easy. 34-17, they pull away from Florida State. Nobody gets a team ready at the beginning of the season like Nick Saban does. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for Aaron Triplett. I'm Tony Mack. It's been a great show. Thank you guys for listening. It's Tony Mack and the Triplett. Enjoy college football. We'll be back next week to do it all again. Right here on Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump. Have a great day, everybody.